Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you for joining us on the third episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. And this episode is brought to you by our great friends at EuroFantasyLeague.com. We're going to be doing a lot more things with our friends there. We're going to have a Calcio Land Fantasy League. You can still play for Dover this weekend, the World Cup game, and then you'll be able to play fantasy football for all the big leagues in Europe. So I'm joined by our great friend, co-host, producer, Alex Goldberg. Before we get to, I wanted to ask you a couple more things on Cristiano Ronaldo. I have to ask you about that fantastic match between Croatia and England. So let me ask you, Alex, what was your main takeaway from that match?
Oh, the main takeaway. Oh, my side takeaway is, oh boy, is Mandzukic clutch. He doesn't know how to not score in big games. That's my side takeaway. But David, my main takeaway is whether Luka Modric has a good game, a bad game, a great game, there's something about him where his teammates want to rally around him. I think back to a couple games ago when he had missed that penalty. And then obviously it went to penalties, but all the Croatian players said after the game that they said to each other once he missed the penalty, let's do this for Luka. And clearly in the last game against England, Luka was laboring a bit, as they all were. They've just played so many minutes. But there is something about Luka Modric that his teammates really, really respect, and they know how much he puts into it. Yes, he finally did get taken out in extra time because he just had no more, but usually he's that type of player that actually gets stronger as the game goes on, and I think his teammates recognize that. They recognize the heart he has. They know that the best players in the world are not necessarily the top goal scorers. Luka Modric has done nothing except raise his stock this World Cup. I think he is the ultimate captain midfielder. People sometimes think of captains as being boisterous and loud, but how can you not want to follow a player like Luka Modric who leads by example? So thinking about the Croatian players saying a couple of games ago, hey, let's win this for Luka, it really looked like they were doing that once again. Besides winning it for their country, it really looks like Luka Modric is the true heart and soul of that team. So that was my main takeaway. David, what about you?
I'm glad you mentioned Modric because I've been thinking a lot about him. You know, I watched him play in the recent Champions League finals and how he's dominated those even without scoring. Obviously, how important he's been for Croatia. I think a lot of our listeners know that Andrea Pirlo is probably my favorite player from the past 20 years. But I have to say, I don't know if Pirlo, even at his peak, was ever as good as what we've seen from Modric in the past few years. And look, a lot of my followers are Serie A fans. I got a lot of insults for even bringing up that. But I think you can make a great case for Modric over Pirlo. If anything, it's certainly very close. Obviously, Mandzukic, as you said, as clutch as it gets, that grinta, and just the bigger the moment, the higher his performance is. I thought Ivan Perisic was superb in that game, as well. I tweeted, you know, he was in look at me now Manchester United mode. I saw some people got a little salty over that, but if you understand nuance, I was also basically saying that he can be pretty hit or miss. We saw a lot of matches with Inter last season when he looked a little bit disinterested, but when he's on, he can be devastating a winger as there is in the game right now, and that was really a performance for the ages for him. The last two thoughts I have on this is I saw Mick Jagger, the singer of the Rolling Stones, who brings the worst luck in the world, was at the game tweeting, go England. The minute I saw that, if I could have bet the house on England losing, I would have. I mean, that guy brings more bad luck than an army of black cats trying to break into a mirror factory and trying to tear that place down. I mean, it was the kiss of death having it there. But you have to tip your cap to Croatia. I thought they were really, really impressive there. The last thing that we can say about the final to tie it into Serie A, remarkably, Inter's going to have a player in the World Cup final once again. They're on a streak of having this since 1982. It's really pretty incredible and pretty remarkable. So we had on one end England, all with players from the Premier League, and Croatia with the two players from Serie A scoring the decisive goals. So let me ask you, Alex, real quick, what do you expect in the final? Who do you think is going to win?
Overall, I do think France will win. I think the talent will win out, mainly because I think one player on France, I don't know who it's going to be, but I think one player will have an extremely good performance. But overall, I expect Croatia to be tired because they've played in three straight extra time games. And I expect France, at least out of the gates, to be pretty nervous. They have a pretty young team. So I think to start, Croatia might look tired. And France might look nervous, but I think sooner or later, France, somebody on France, maybe it's Pogba, maybe Pogba gets a goal, but maybe it's someone like Mbappe or Griezmann. I think one player will kind of bring France out of it and really shine through. That's my prediction. So I'll say I hate score predictions, but I'll do 2-1 to France. How about you, David?
So I've been thinking a lot about this. You know, I think France, after losing the Euro final against Portugal at home when they were probably clear favorites, I don't know if it can happen two times in a row. I feel like they've peaked at the right time. As you mentioned, Croatia is going to be more tired. Everything points to France, but this has been the World Cup where in a lot of ways, when you look at it in those terms, you are surprised. So I'm going to go with a shocking result for Croatia and say that they're going to win. So let's flip gears, Alex. I want to ask you about this before we bring on our great friend Carlo Garganese to analyze all the news of the week. We've talked, obviously, a lot about Ronaldo to Juve on the podcast this week. One thing that you and I haven't really discussed yet, and I think this really speaks to what in great shape Ronaldo is. You know, we've talked about the parallels to LeBron James, two players who at 33, an age where players, their peak should be over. They should be clearly on the downside or playing at the peak of their performance. But, you know, Juve signed them to a 4-year contract, big money. It's in some ways, it's a gamble. Do you think we underestimated on the podcast so far the age factor? Could you see that at some point creeping in?
At some point, yes, but honestly, no, because as you mentioned, he kind of is likened to LeBron James. Somehow, he almost gets in better shape as he gets older, but I also don't think it'll be that big of a role anytime soon, because if there's one thing he is, he's smart within the game. He knows what he can still do and probably what he can't still do. I mean, he showed us this last year with that bicycle kick in the Champions League. He still has supreme, supreme athleticism, but also, I think someone like Max Allegri is really going to also help mask the fact that maybe Ronaldo's getting up there in age. I think we've seen Ronaldo move more towards the middle. He's not necessarily a full-time left winger anymore. Who knows if Gonzalo Higuain is still there, but if he's not, we might see Ronaldo really be more central, maybe with Dybala playing off of him. So I think between Ronaldo's self-awareness in terms of what he can and can't still do, and also the supreme versatility of Max Allegri as a manager, I don't think it's going to creep up that soon. But it's one of those things where it's so hard to predict. I mean, LeBron James all of a sudden might fall, not fall off a cliff, but all of a sudden we might see a huge downfall in what he can do. But honestly, I don't think it's coming that soon for Cristiano Ronaldo. So I would say we haven't downplayed it that much. So David, that's my opinion. What about you?
We talked about it a little bit when we had Steve Cerruti on Wednesday. I kind of see it a little bit like we see this probably more in baseball when teams sign a player to maybe a longer contract than they should, where it's like the first 2-3 years is there, you're going to get your money's worth, and the last year or two is a sunk cost. I think that's how it's going to ultimately play out for Juve. I have no doubt the first year or two, he's going to be sensational. I think, too, he's really motivated. You know, he left Real Madrid, won 3 Champions League there. I think he wants to show that he can win one without them. You've talked about it, Alex, on our last podcast, that if he wins the Champions League at Juve, I mean, what better way to improve his legacy? We know how motivated he is with staying in shape. So that's how I think it's going to play out. I think the first 2 years, they're going to be great. After that, we'll see what happens. So before we bring on our great friend Carlo Garganese for the interview, I just have a quick thing I want to tell to our listeners. I want to thank you. You guys have been incredibly supportive for what we do on Cultureland. You guys have been incredibly supportive to me with everything that I do. I can tell you that it's really starting to pay off. You know, we have our friends at Euro Fantasy Game. You're going to see Alex and I do some podcasts with them. And don't worry, those are going to be in addition to your usual slate of Calcioland. The podcast will be a little bit different. You're going to hear a little bit more from Alex, which I know that's something a lot of you want. So we're going to branch out a little bit more. But we really need your continued support. We're right on the verge of being where we need to be with the downloads and listens. So please keep sharing the podcast. I love reading the tweets where you guys tell your followers about us. You know, please keep leaving the reviews on iTunes. If you're listening to us on your iPhones or on your iPad, it literally takes 2 seconds to leave us a 5-star review. You want to leave a comment, we really appreciate it. So thanks so much for all you do. It's certainly noticed here. We rely on you to be our marketing department, and you guys have been fantastic so far. And to end the week, here's our great friend, Carlo Garganese. Okay, with such an eventful week between the World Cup final, Ronaldo officially to Juve, Sarri all but official to Chelsea, there really is no better person to discuss all this than the global head of features for Goal.com, a returning champion of the Calcioland podcast, Carlo Garganese. I'm thrilled to chat with you, brother. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hey, yeah, I'm thrilled to be back as well. Crazy week of football, eh? And Ronaldo mania.
Absolutely. So, Carlo, as usual, I send the guests the questions ahead of time to make sure we cover everything that you know that you think is appropriate, and that I'm not asking you questions that you want to talk about. And you right away told me, David, you know what? These questions are great, but you have to ask me about the Croatian players using the English media as motivation for the semifinal. For those of you that aren't fully aware of what Carlo's all about, he's obviously an Italian, an expert of Italian football who lives in London. So you kind of have an objective take on all this. So tell me about your reaction reading about the Croatian players talking about the media in England and in general the attitude of the English and how they use that as motivation.
Good. I don't know where to start. Well, first of all, I don't think it's fair to say that they use it as motivation. I think it did work for them. But it's the English media have got really upset about Modric's comments. And I think they completely missed the point, really, because they just don't. I mean, as an Italian with Italian parents who grew up in a place called Bedford, which has a huge Italian population, I can kind of, you know, I see kind of both cultures. And I think that the English media, and it's not all the English media, it's, you know, there's loads of fantastic English journalists, many that I work with. It's a small group. Maybe I would like to describe them as kind of like a small kind of inner circle who, you know, I have to be honest, are very arrogant. They are, you know, feel quite self-entitled that with regards to England and, you know, the World Cup. And they don't really see how arrogant they are. And it's been apparent throughout the tournament. I mean, it's been a great tournament for England. It's been fantastic to see England do really, really well. And, you know, the last 20 years have been pretty much a disaster for the England national team. So to see England go to semi-finals, to see the hope and pride restored in the national team, the weather's been fantastic as well this summer in England. It's been a great time to be around in England. But I think that it has gone a little bit too far. That the kind of the meme, that it's coming home meme, has just, and I can tell you, living here, it's driven me crazy in the last week. For the fans, fine, but kind of like everyone's getting involved, like the ex internationals, the pundits, you know, all, you know, and yes, it is only a little bit of fun, but I think it went a little bit too far. And really, since the group stages, I think the media in England have pretty much said that England had a bye for semi-finals. Then once Spain went out, they had a bye pretty much to the final. And it if you see some of the headlines and the front pages, I think before the Colombia game, there was a disgraceful headline in one of the tabloids. But I was just going to say, The Sun, which basically reduced Colombia to a country that only produces cocaine and nothing else, and it caused huge uproar in Colombia before that game. It actually caused a diplomatic incident with the ambassador. And there's examples of this consistently through the World Cup. And I think, you know, Modric was pretty much just saying what the rest of the world thinks about the English media. And I think the English media needs to accept it, to be honest. I don't think they like to accept it.
So, Carlo, now let's flip gears to the big story of the week for us that cover Italian football. I have to be honest, I was very skeptical the whole way through with the stories on Ronaldo to Juve, even with my boss, Di Marzio, reporting it. It's not that I doubted the reporting. I just thought Juve wasn't going to be able to get it over the finish line for financial reasons. I felt maybe Mendes and Ronaldo were using them to get a new contract from from Real Madrid. So give me your gut reaction to the transfer. Were you a believer from the get-go, or were you just as surprised as I was?
Well, my first reaction was I didn't take it seriously when the first story came. I pretty much didn't even give it a second thought. It didn't make any sense, you know, for a number of reasons. Financially, knowing the way that Juventus have always done their business, knowing the highest earner at Juventus was Higuain on €7.5 million, and you know Ronaldo was going to earn 30 million net, which is then 60 million gross. So financially, you know, it didn't make any sense, especially when you consider he's 33, 34 years old. And also, you know, knowing the way that Ronaldo has always been, you know, he pretty much every single year threatens to leave Madrid and then usually gets a new contract. So, you know, he's the kind of the boy that cries wolf, and I didn't believe it. And, you know, it's now the wolf really has come to the door, you know. So it did surprise me. And also surprised me how quickly it then developed. I mean, a few days later, I did learn that there was something in it. But you don't expect a transfer of the Ballon d'Or holder and such a global superstar to go through and be completed in such a short amount of time. And that is really, really surprised me. And these kind of deals usually take months to put together, and it happened in not even weeks, more like days, really. So it's been an astonishing story, really.
Yeah, I remember, Carlo, when you and I first got to know each other in the football world, and this was when Juve lost out on Alexis Sanchez because Marotta and Juve did the opposite of what they did here. They waited all too long, and they let a great player slip through the cracks, and maybe they learned their lesson with this one. So let me ask you, you mentioned, you know, Ronaldo's 33. He's still at the top of his game at his right now. Obviously, it seems off the pitch this has been an absolute home run for Juve. So how do you look at this move? Do you think the impact's going to be bigger on how he performs on the pitch? Or do you think the impact's going to be bigger for the branding and what it's going to mean for Juve's appeal worldwide?
So I think that Juventus have signed him more for branding, for the commercial side of things. I mean, yes, he's still playing at a fantastic level. I think in 2018, he's been playing as well as ever. His goal scoring record is sensational in 2018. He still looks as fit as ever. But, you know, he is 33. He's going to turn 34 in February. And looking back, kind of, I think like the last 35, 40 years, I can't think off the top of my head a Ballon d'Or winning attacker who has still been playing at a real superstar level past the age of 33, 34, you know, and into their mid-30s. I can't think of one. I mean, if we go back to the 80s, the real superstars, you know, you've got like Platini, he was retired at 32. You've got Van Basten was retired in his early 30s. Hullet was at Chelsea when he was like 33, 34. Then you've got, you know, the Brazilian Ronaldo was back in Brazil. You've got Shevchenko was done at in his early 30s. You know, Kaká was way past his best into his late 20s. You know, and I could go on and on, go through all of them, really. Zico was playing in Japan. I mean, I can't think of one player, one superstar, global superstar, that was a Ballon d'Or winner and played in attack who was still playing at an absolutely astonishing world-class level after the age of 34. So if Ronaldo's going to do that, then he's going to have to break the mold. So that's worrying to me a little bit. But, you know, if someone can do it, it is Ronaldo, because he is physically, you know, he is a freak. I mean that in a as a compliment. You know, he's the way he looks at himself. His obsessions with being the best, not only physically but also mentally. He's such a bad loser, and again, I mean that as a compliment. He always wants to be the best. So if anyone can do it, it's Ronaldo. But you know, the body is, you know, the human body. You can't fight against the human body. Well, you can only do so for so long. It catches up with all of us eventually. So that is my worry. I think from the commercial side of point of view, it's a big win for Juventus and for Italian football. That they're going to get so much from it. We've already seen the spikes in the share prices, the number of shirts that have been sold. I think it's like over half a million shirts already sold in a number of days by Juventus stores. You know, the players that are going to be attracted to Juventus and Serie A, the interest that's going to be in the league among neutrals. Ronaldo transcends sports. So there's going to be people watching football in Serie A, who are not even football fans. And you know, it's going to be absolutely fantastic for the league, and I think it will definitely help to grow and build up Juventus going forward.
Absolutely. Yeah, you already hinted, which was the next question, the impact on the league. I definitely think it's just going to bring so many more eyeballs, and it's going to help the other teams. There's so many teams in Serie A that play so well, and when Ronaldo's going to face some more team, more outsiders are going to take notice of that. So the next thing I wanted to ask you, there was a picture today on Di Marzio site of Sarri right after signing his contract with Chelsea. I remember when we had you on at the beginning of last season in Serie A, you picked Napoli to win the Scudetto. They came really close. They got 91 points, had a superb season. I've always said, you know, people make fun of Sarri that he hasn't won any titles, but I think that says a lot more about Juve than it does about him. But Chelsea is probably not the easiest place to be. The Premier League is definitely different. So tell me your take of Sarri at Chelsea. How do you think it's going to work out? What's your gut reaction on this?
Well, I think it's no secret. I'm a huge fan of Sarri. He's definitely been my favourite team to watch over the last 2 to 3 years. He'll play great football there if he's given the time. He needs time. His football looks simple, but it's actually very complex with the movements. A lot of work goes into training and lots of different complex movements repeated over and over again in training. It's something that doesn't happen straight away. And we've seen it throughout his time at Napoli, that when Sarri has made new signings, that he's always been very cautious in bringing them into the team straight away. He's always taken, you know, months sometimes to bring a new signing into the team. And that often frustrated the president, De Laurentiis, who used to say, you know, I've spent all this money, I've spent 20 million on this player, 30 million on this player, and you're not playing these players. Well, why are you not playing them? So, you know, it will take time. And it's obviously, you know, he's obviously going to be hindered by the farcical situation in that, you know, the season starts in 3 weeks and he's not even taken a training session yet. I mean, that really is going to handicap him. That's not his fault. That's the club's fault, because the club has been run so badly over the last year. We're in this ridiculous situation where, I mean, Conte was even coming in for training this week, even though he's leaving the club, and they've known he's leaving for a year. So it's a joke that this is what Sarri's, you know, he's going to inherit a bit of a chaotic situation. I mean, there's been no new signings yet. Obviously, Jorginho's coming. They are going to make some other big signings. And then that will also be very important as to how Sarri does, which players they bring in, because I think that right now they're not strong enough with the current squad that they've got to challenge definitely Manchester City, but they're even behind, and as we saw last season, they're even behind some of the other big teams.
So let's talk about the person that he replaced. You already hinted at Conte, that was there at the training sessions for a week when we all knew he was going to leave. But ultimately, how do you think he's going to be remembered at Chelsea? And more importantly, where do you see him going next? Like, obviously, there's no a logical destination right now. Where do you see the next chapter for him, and how do you think he'll be remembered at Chelsea?
Well, he won't be remembered fondly by the club, that's for sure. I mean, anybody that's seen the statement that Chelsea put out for his sacking or for his, it's going to get all legal now. So there's going to be court cases. I think the statement they put out was only 50, 55 words, which is sad, really, that it's come to this, because this is a guy that produced absolute miracle, winning the Premier League title in his first season with what I consider quite an ordinary team, if I'm honest. Had some great players, but it wasn't a particularly great Chelsea team, and yet he set a record at the time, points record, I think a record for the number of wins consecutive. He did an incredible job in that first season. Yes, no European football, but absolutely brilliant achievement to win the Premier League. And any manager that wins the Premier League for their club should be remembered fondly. But, you know, sadly, you know, it was the second season was a complete disaster. I don't think Conte always covered himself in glory. I think he didn't handle the Diego Costa situation very well with the text message. I think his constant complaining, you know, in the press didn't help, even though he probably was right and he wasn't given the players that they did. It was a poor transfer market by Chelsea. Didn't get the players that he wanted. Still, he didn't really help the situation. But having said that, putting that all aside, at the end of the day, he won the Premier League. He still won an FA Cup in his second season, despite all the chaos. You know, he should be remembered. I think, you know, in time, I hope that the Chelsea fans will acknowledge that, you know, he did a great job and he always, you know, he gave his all. And really, if there's anyone to blame for the situation, it's Chelsea Football Club, who haven't been run very well, in my opinion, for a few years now. And the fact that, you know, they're in this situation where the season's starting in a few weeks and they still haven't even got the new manager in, they haven't got any new signings, you know, is farcical, really. They've known for a year that Conte's leaving. And here we are, a few weeks from the start of the new season, and they've only just got rid of him, and now there's a court case coming. So it's been handled absolutely abysmally by Chelsea. And unfortunately, you know, that's going to have a knock-on effect on Conte. As for where he goes next, I don't see him going anywhere for a while yet, mainly because of this court case. I don't see him taking a new job, because if he does, that's going to affect the court case. So I think he will be out of work for a few months, I would say.
You know, it's really remarkable if Conte, two jobs in a row at big clubs, it ends in really acrimonious way. So, you know, he's the common denominator. And I agree with you. I blame Chelsea much more than him for the situation. But there probably is something about him, too, that leads to things ending this way. So let's shift gears now. Let's talk about Sarri's former team. You know, you have to admire the fact that they were able to attract a huge name like Carlo Ancelotti. But last season, Sarri got to 91 points, highest point total in Serie A without winning the title. Where do you see the biggest benefit of having Ancelotti? Do you think he can get him over the hump in Serie A, or will this help more in Europe and with the branding of the club?
I would say probably more the latter. I think he is Mr. Champions League when it comes to coaches. He really knows what is required to win in Europe. So let's hope that, you know, that takes Napoli onto the next level in Europe. Serie A, I mean, strangely, you know, Ancelotti's record in league football has not always been the best, certainly compared to his Champions League record. I mean, he only won the one Serie A title with Milan, despite, you know, that team dominating the Champions League for probably a good 5 years in the middle of the last decade. So, you know, he's someone who doesn't necessarily always have the attention to detail, the kind of week in, week out. So, you know, I'd be interested to see how he does. And so I think Napoli probably need to bring in some players. They haven't done too much work on the transfer market yet. I mean, Jorginho is obviously going to leave to go to Chelsea. They've brought in Fabian Ruiz, who my Spanish colleagues at Goal that I've spoken to think he's a fantastic player. So I'm excited to see how he does at Napoli. But apart from that, haven't really brought in any other kind of big names. So I think they need to do a little bit of work, really, especially seeing what Juventus have already done in the market. But again, like Ronaldo, I think the name of Ancelotti is great for Napoli. It'll be great to attract, it will help attract big names, definitely. We've already seen the likes of Benzema and Di Maria. Whether or not they're the right players, the point is that those players would never be linked to Napoli if Ancelotti wasn't there. So I think it's great for Napoli that they've got a big name there, and it's also, again, great for the league.
So let's talk about a team that's certainly made a lot of moves on the transfer market, Inter. They brought in Asamoah, De Vrij, Lautaro Martinez, Nainggolan. They look to me, at least on paper, as probably Juve's biggest rival going into the season. But, you know, Inter's known to do well on the transfer market, and sometimes the results don't translate to the pitch. So what's your take on Inter's this summer, and what do you expect from them during the season?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think so far their transfer market's been excellent. Shrewd acquisitions. I mean, Asamoah on a free transfer, De Vrij on a free transfer. You know, Nainggolan, who, I mean, I didn't think had the greatest season last year at Roma, and is now 30, I think. But you know, Spalletti knows how to handle him and get the best out of him. So you know, if he does manage to do that, then they're going to have obviously a fantastic player for their midfield, and obviously the youngster up front, Martinez, who I was actually speaking to an Argentine colleague of mine earlier today about him, and he reliably informs me that he's the most exciting striker to come out of Argentina since Aguero. So you know, if that's true, then they're going to have another fantastic Argentine striker on their hands. So they have done good work in the market. They're still missing a right back, I think. Maybe could do with another attacking midfielder as well. But they've definitely strengthened inside. They've definitely improved significantly player-wise from last season. And that's all you can really ask for now.
So let me ask you about one of the best players to leave Serie A this summer, in my opinion, and that's Lucas Torreira, who's now joined Arsenal. So tell our listeners who might not be too familiar with Torreira what we can expect from him at Arsenal.
I really like Torreira. I think he had a fantastic World Cup with Uruguay. He's very short, which might concern you a little bit, given the Premier League is very physical and the importance on kind of the aerial game. But he's a real fighter. He's a real tough kid. And what I really like about him is his mentality. He's got great personality on the pitch. He always wants the ball. He's never shy to receive it. He uses the ball. He's an excellent short game. He's got a great delivery on him. Takes set pieces. I think he'll be a good addition for Arsenal. And it's one position that has been a weak position for Arsenal for quite a number of years now, is at the centre of midfield. And I think that really it's there for the taking for Torreira to make one of those centre midfield positions his own. So I think he'll be a good signing for Arsenal. I am worried about Arsenal as a whole, though, next season. Looking at their squad, I don't think it's strong enough to challenge the other teams. I would say they're the weakest team of the big six, if you like. At the moment, they need more signings, so that is the worry. But in Torreira, I think definitely they've got a very promising player on their hands.
Absolutely. So since I have you on before the final, I have to ask you, what's the prediction? We've seen Croatia have a very impressive run. We've seen France hit their peak at the right time. It should be a very exciting final. So you tell me, how do you think it's going to play out?
Who knows? You know, this World Cup has been so unpredictable, so many shocks. I mean, logically, you'd have to favour France. I mean, you know, Croatia have played three extra time games in the trot. And I think France individually are obviously a stronger team. They've really got no weaknesses individually in their team. But you know, Croatia. You know, this can be something so historic for Croatia. I think the way that they won the game against England the other day, the belief and fight, and you know they've got so many tough players in their team. You know, Mandzukic has barely been able to run this whole tournament. Yet he's such a fighter, and you know Modric in the centre of midfield. I'm absolutely in love with him, and I think he deserves to win the Ballon d'Or. He's an absolute genius. It would be an amazing, amazing story if Croatia could win it. I mean, a country of just 4 million people, it's a miracle. It's a miracle that they're in the final. It would be an absolutely amazing story, and it's a once-in-a-lifetime chance for them. So it would be, you know, romantic. The romantic side of me, it would be beautiful to see Croatia win it. But I think I would have to favour France, really. They should be fresher, and you know I think there's more certainties with them throughout the team. But it's a final, it's one game, and as we've seen with this World Cup, you just never know, you just don't know what's going to happen. So who knows? Let's just hope it's another great match, and you know what has been a really exciting tournament.
Absolutely. So tell our listeners, I know you guys at Gold did fantastic coverage during the World Cup. You had correspondents out in Russia. And now that it's coming to an end, what can we expect on the website in the coming weeks?
Well, the World Cup final, and we will go massive on that. So, I mean, that's the big starting point. We've got some great, great coverage coming up on that. I mean, you know, then it's the new season. I mean, the new season is only a few weeks away. You forget that when the World Cup's on. The friendlies are already starting. We're the official partner of the ICC tournament that's taking place in America. So we're doing a lot of coverage around those games, interviews and covering matches. And then it's the new season, really. And you know, Ronaldo's debut, the new La Liga season, new Premier League, Serie A is going to be exciting. It's going to be great. And then we've got our goal 50. Which be in October, November time, where we pick our 50 best players of 2018, and it'll be interesting to see who wins that this year. I think I've already probably given away my vote.
This time, Milinkovic-Savic is going to be in the top 50. You think he's going to make it in?
I think, yeah, you asked me that question last year, didn't you? I think he's got a great chance. And I think if he makes a 150 million euro move, I think he's got an even bigger chance, I think. But we'll have to see if that happens.
Yeah, Lotito would be as big a winner as he would be to make the list if that happens. Well, listen, Carlo, always fantastic to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy the World Cup final, and we look forward to having you on during the season. Okay, buddy?
Yeah, absolutely. Welcome, David, and yeah, all the best, and thanks again for having me.